Okay, so I didn't eat lunch. What did they serve for lunch?
Too much.
What was it? Was it really a steak? Really? Okay, because sometimes it's chicken in many different forms, you know, and you don't recognize the forms it can be in. My topic today is unmasking, CDL masking, and it's one that I've sat through just like you guys and listened to Ryan talk to us about, you know, no masking and what we can't do. Most of us know that. Can't grant driver safety course. I mean, the basic things are right here. No driver safety course, no deferred disposition, no masking, no hiding, no throwing in, you know, the trash can, not reporting to DPS, all those things which the federal government does not want us to do. Texas was a little late, as we have been traditionally on some of the other things too, but this is one that we got a wake-up call and finally figured we better get with the program or we start losing funds. Just like, you know, the .08 blood alcohol, all that started through federal government, DOT. If you don't comply and go to the .08 standard, you can wave goodbye to federal highway funds. So those are valuable funds and even more valuable when we're in economic downturn. But Ryan and asked me to teach this topic, so we've been doing this for, I guess, about 9 months, and also Judge Garcia, so we kind of combined the program, and my goal was to try and create everything you needed on one sheet of paper. I have to have things written down. That's the way I operate. So in your materials, you know, I would have loved to get it to the top three concepts, but it wasn't there, but it is between top three and top 10, so it's top eight. So there's really eight concepts, and they have the blessing from Pope Ryan with the holy water that this is pretty much boiling it down to the gravy or the roux. So that's what I've tried to do, boil it down into something that we can easily understand. And this kind of shook out from everything we've been told about the CDL drivers. And then come Missouri, March 20th of 2006, submitted questions. I guess like questions that courts can certify questions to send off to federal courts. Well, this was certified questions they sent off to the U.S. Department of Transportation to ask questions about, in this scenario, can we do this? In this other scenario, can we do that? And we'll talk about three different scenarios. In the paper, though, I think there's a total of six scenarios, and we're going to take three today, but you have all six that are in there. One of them is the prosecutor decides a problem with the evidence and decides not to prosecute the case when the citation was written for a moving traffic violation. No charges filed in the court. Is that a violation? Okay, so that's number one. Number two is a CDL operator cited for a traffic offense, and then it goes to trial. There's contrary evidence presented. State fails to meet the burden of proof. Judge dismisses case. Is that a problem? That's what Missouri asked. And number three, CDL operator cited for a moving violation. Prior to filing the charges with the court, the prosecutor looks at it, thinks there could be a problem with the moving violation, only files an equipment violation. No moving violation filed. Is that a problem? So we're going to kind of talk about those and then the reason behind this. And I guess what kind of distills out in a lot of these is what is legal may not always be ethical. A lot of the judges are doing what we should do. We're doing everything right. And then there are cases where prosecutors are doing things that we've heard about, like sweetheart deals. Well, I can't give him a deferred, so I'm going to dismiss the charge. And if he doesn't get any tickets in 6 months, I won't refile him. Is that skirting the law? You know, those are ethical issues. So our learning objectives is we are going to explain what exactly is masking. What does that mean when the federal government talks about masking, no masking? And number two, what's the history and public policy? Why? Why are we doing this? Why is the federal government so interested in this? And third, identify what are judicial acts that consider consider masking that are ethical violations. Judge Garcia added this little clip in here, and this kind of goes to the reason why involved.
Bel Air, Texas.
We've got a situation that may come up very critical right now.
A man is threatening hundreds of freeway commuters with a deadly weapon. His 30-ton semi. Job stress and meth use have caused him to snap.
The law enforcement officers are trying to slow this maniac down in this 18-wheeler.
Now the madman leads officers, including Anthony Heffernan and Joe Jenkins, on a terrifying chase.
The big thing for me, what was going through my mind was, how are we going to get this semi-stop?
Something told me, do not get in his path. Do not cut in front of him.
The jacked-up trucker sends a clear message. He'll keep going, no matter who's in his way.
He purposely went out of his way to strike a police car, so the stakes did go up at that point.
Unfortunately, his obstacles right now are innocent motorists. The behemoth bowls through traffic, striking countless cars. Nothing slows him down. But a construction zone could change everything.
Keep your eyes on this. All the cars are closing in. He's not going to have much room to go.
And we get to that point and it's just complete standstill in traffic.
Cops leap out and run toward the driver.
Go, go, go!
And as I get to probably about mid-trailer, I hear him start revving up the engine again. And that's when you go, oh no, what's going to happen now?
Suddenly, the driver throws it into gear, bulldozing through cars and trucks.
He's trying to push him forward, trying to push him forward. Look at this.
I was floored. I couldn't believe it. I would never thought in a million years that he wasn't going to stop or that he was going to do what he did.
The insane maneuver gets the trucker through the logjam, giving him a wide open road. But it also gives cops just cause to unleash their full firepower.
There's other officers that are lining the road, that are shooting at the truck at this point.
Giant slabs of rubber fall to the pavement as the big rig's tires are ripped to shreds. Soon, the lumbering giant has been brought to its knees. Officers on foot move in, firing into the engine.
They fired some rounds into the radiator and it came to a stop.
Hands up!
The road warrior is wrestled to the ground. The reign of terror finally over. His path is a wasteland of twisted metal, but fortunately not of injured civilians.
You're just so happy that you've stopped him or that you played a small part in stopping him.
Hector Barrazzo is charged with aggravated assault on a public servant and sentenced to 10 years in prison. Considering the damage he caused and the lives he endangered, it's a decade that's well deserved.
He's trying to push him forward, trying to push him forward. Look at this.
Well, that's an interesting clip there. And that kind of falls under the reasoning of why were the feds interested in controlling and regulating commercial truck drivers. And most truck drivers are good drivers, so it's not meant to malign professional truck drivers. But the bottom line is very large vehicles, heavy loads, some of them carrying hazmat materials. So when you've got those drivers on the road, the federal government really wanted to make sure that there weren't things that were hiding or masking convictions. And a lot of this started when it was discovered years ago that some of the drivers knew the drill pretty well. They'd lose their license in Texas, then they'd go over to Tennessee, get a license, wear that one out, then go over to another state. So it became clear very quickly that there needed to be a federal database and control of commercial driver's licenses, or you had 48 states to go play in before, you know, you were out of licenses. So that's one of the reasons why the federal government decided to do something about it. And the whole thrust of this topic today is U.S. Code Title 49, Part 384, and it's 384.226, which is under the code for, you know, U.S. DOT for prohibitions on masking convictions. So this is all under state compliance with commercial driver's license programs. That's Part 384 out of the Transportation Code, which is Title 49. So this is what started it all. The Motor Carrier Safety Improvement Act of 1999 and Section 384.226, which says, and again, this is in your materials, the law is, quote, the state must not mask, defer imposition of judgment, or allow an individual to enter into a diversion program that would prevent a CDL driver's conviction for any violation in any motor vehicle, meaning personal or the commercial one, of a state or local traffic control law except a parking violation, from appearing on the driver's record, whether the driver was convicted for an offense committed in the state where the driver's license or another state. So, in other words, no diversion programs and no masking. So, let's go on and look at this. Texas, again, decided they had to get into compliance. The Motor Carrier Safety Improvement Act was to collect data about the commercial driver's license driving behavior and share among the states. And the reasoning, again, is CDL drivers, yeah, they're held to a higher standard. And I guess my disclaimer is I'm presenting what information I know about it. Everyone has different personal beliefs, especially when it comes down to commercial drivers having been given citations in their own personal vehicles. And I know of situations where one of them was actually driving a Volkswagen, you know, bug. And the prosecutor's like, but this is in his own personal vehicle. You know, it's not an 18-wheeler. It's a very small 2,000-pound vehicle. Well, the law says it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's a personal vehicle. It doesn't matter if it's the big 18-wheeler tractor trailer. Treated the same standard. No deferreds, no masking, no diversion programs. Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, FMCSA, Federal Law 49, that's 384.226. Again, state must not mask, defer imposition of judgment, or allow any type of diversion programs. Okay, that seems pretty clear cut. So, up front, before there's even a trial, no DSC, no deferred disposition. After trial, in the court of original jurisdiction, is the way it's phrased, there can't be any after trial deferred disposition. And you can't do something cute like, you know, and there's been cases like this where the judge says, well, he's convicted of speeding, but I'm going to change it to an equipment violation. Doesn't sound like a bright idea to do anyway to me, because I think that would be, to me, a tampering with the governmental record. I think if there's a trial and he's convicted of speeding and the judge decides to change it to a different violation, I mean, I think that's tampering, which is, you know, felony, but certainly would violate this federal statute. And there was cases where judges would say, okay, well, look, I've got to find you guilty, but I tell you what we'll do. We'll just put it over here in file 13, and it won't go to DPS. It won't get reported and then caught on the national database. Can't do that either. Can't hide it, change it, dump it, mask it. That's pretty much it, I think. So the interesting thing is the statute talks about masking in trial courts of original jurisdiction. And the questions come up, well, what happens, because we all know the attorneys who represent the CDL drivers catch on pretty quickly. It's like, okay, if you're not a court of record, here's what we're going to do. Plead no contest, jump it out to county court at law, right? I mean, y'all seen that happen in your jurisdiction? I've seen it happen in our jurisdiction. And, you know, that happens on all cases that I've seen. If people have the money to hire a lawyer, they'll try just appeal it. Because what happens traditionally, well, I know in Travis County where Lakeway is in jurisdiction, they're so busy in county court at law with assaults, family violence, criminal trespass, and DWIs, that traffic ticket appeal, or trial de novo, is going to sit there and languish for a long time. And the prosecutors in the county don't really care. It's not really their case. That's the way a lot of them look at it. It's just from that lower court down here.
Yes.
Okay, so what you're saying is the argument from a criminal defense attorney is if you're going forward on this, then it should be pled in the complaint that this driver was a CDL holder.
Right.
Is that the argument?
Right.
Okay, is that, have you all seen that? Has that argument been made in your jurisdiction, anybody? You've seen it? Where are you from?
El Paso.
El Paso. Okay, so they're doing it here. Okay. If it's not in the complaint, then we should be able to get our driver safety course if we want it. So the argument is it's not pled as CDL driver, so we're willing to plead and we want to defer to our driver safety course.
Right.
That's what they're shooting for. So they'll argue it goes to the secondary issue of punishment, i.e. what choices, what options are available. It's an interesting area. I think that would be a very interesting case on appeal. Well, that's an interesting concept. I guess the moral of that story is if you're going to get a DWI, get it before you go apply for your CDL. Or tickets, too. Well, the feds have their law. Texas has no law, no definition, so we have to look to, you know, what the federal law says for masking. We've kind of started picking that apart here. Commercial Motor Vehicle Safety Act started in 1986 was to subject commercial motor vehicle drivers to new uniform sanctions. Again, consolidating everything so it wouldn't be happenstance just crisscrossed across the United States of licenses with different standards, how many violations, what's going to happen with the license. All the states had different testing and licensing, had different standards for disciplinary action. And again, what we were talking about before, drivers had multiple licenses. The Motor Carrier Safety Improvement Act 1999 requires U.S. DOT to withhold Motor Carrier Safety Assistance Program grant funds from states if they don't comply. Texas adopted the federal law, obviously, to protect those funds. And the Motor Carrier Safety Act says that it may prohibit a state from issuing, renewing, transferring, or upgrading CDLs if the agency determines the state is in substantial non-compliance. So they can look at Texas and decide whether in compliance or non-compliance and withhold funds accordingly. Well, let's kind of go through what the top eight concepts are. I think that's the real meat of the matter here. Number one, the Motor Carrier Safety Improvement Act prohibits masking, deferral, or diversion. And that's what we talked about here. Calling it something it isn't, changing it, that's masking, or any type of diversion. Only diversion programs I know really are driver safety course or deferred disposition, which can be given up front or it can be given after a finding of guilt. Then you can defer imposition and then go with the deferred. So those two are at, can't do those. Masking, deferral, or diversion can only occur in a trial court of original jurisdiction. And I've been asked this question on a couple of the different presentations around the state is, well, what happens on those cases when they go up on a trial de novo? County court of law? I don't know. I can't answer that for you. Because the argument can be made both ways. Well, that's an appeal, but it's a trial de novo. So doesn't that become the court of original jurisdiction? You have to start all over again and present all the evidence again. I haven't seen any appeals on it. I don't know. So that's certainly the arguments, but the reality of it is, as we know, once it goes up to county court at law, I know in a lot of jurisdictions, most of them, deferred adjudication is handed out, and the CDL driver goes on his or her way achieving their objective, getting that deferral. So is that really defeating what the law says, though, in Title 49? Seems like it is. Again, we need to be concerned with what our duties are as a judge. What a prosecutor does, yeah, it's going to have a bearing, and certainly if it's a prosecutor in our court, you have the right to challenge if there's a dismissal. You know, they get into dismissals here, and we'll talk about those, but really, if you have some trust in your prosecutors and you know this isn't a prosecutor willy-nilly just dismisses cases, that's a different story than being in a jurisdiction, and I've heard the stories, where the prosecutor's dismissing, seems like every case that's a CDL gets dismissed. Well, there's clearly something rotten in Denmark there. Somebody's playing games there. So, can't mask, defer, or divert it. Masking, deferral, or diversion can only occur in a trial court of original jurisdiction. And that's where we're at. Three, prohibited actions of masking, deferral, or diversion occur if you hold it, hide it, or fail to report it. So let's say there's already judgment or verdict. It's written, final judgment, and then the judge goes, I'm just going to put this in a file cabinet. It's not going to go. Well, that's clearly a violation to hold it, hide it, or fail to report it. Mentioned before, the changing of the conviction from a moving to a non-moving, really a bad idea, because I think that's a judge who does that, I think, is really tampering with the government document in addition to violating the federal statute. Again, the granting of a driver's safety or deferred disposition falls right back here. No diversion programs up front or on the back end after a trial. So can't do that. Number four, a court granting a prosecutor's motion to dismiss a charge against a CDL driver is not prohibited. And the reason is the federal government did not want to get into having to read the minds or have you have to explore every time a prosecutor files a motion to dismiss. There are legitimate bases for motions to dismiss. The evidence may not be there. Witness may have moved out of state. May be contrary evidence presented. The one I remember when I was judge out at BK was I had a young prosecutor was filling in for our other prosecutor, and it was a jury trial on a bus driver for, I think it was a speeding case. And this prosecutor really, it got to be a mess. It was a nightmare because she said, well, how many of y'all know the bus driver? Every hand shot up. And I was like, oh, dear God, this isn't going to be good. Oh, yeah, oh, she's wonderful. We love her. She's been taking our kids to school for years. So I thought, well, the prosecutor's not going to enjoy that one too much. And then the prosecutor made a mistake and said, well, would it make a difference to you, ladies and gentlemen, would you be able to render a verdict or would it make a difference to you if there's a conviction knowing that if you convict her that she'll lose her CDL? Well, that's not the law. One conviction is not going to make you lose a CDL. So I had to declare a mistrial because every hand went up and they said, yeah, we're not going to find her guilty if that's going to cost her license. So the case just went to hell in a handbasket very quickly. I had to declare a mistrial and I think the prosecutor decided he wasn't going to retry that case, and it went away. But, you know, there are legitimate bases for motions to dismiss. It may be an evidentiary problem. And this statute is not going to question, if a prosecutor files a motion to dismiss, not going to question that. Flip side, I guess, take it to an extreme, I would think they would be kind of interested in, or the Commission on Judicial Conduct, if, you know, every CDL case in one court, gee, that's funny, they're all dismissed. There's just no evidence, you know, or problems with the evidence on every single CDL case, and the judge is approving it. I think then you're kind of on notice. I mean, if you notice every one of those CDL cases, prosecutor's making a motion to dismiss, I certainly would want to ask the prosecutor, is there a reason why we're dismissing these? Because it sure looks like every motion to dismiss is only on a CDL case. And we did have a court in the Austin area. It was actually a news program, so it's all allegedly, but it is before the commission at this time, I know, where a judge is alleged to have offered to dismiss cases. One of them was a CDL case with a donation to the city. Really bad idea if that happened. And there's some documentary evidence to support that it did happen. So that's in front of the commission right now in Austin. So a prosecutor's decision not to pursue a charge against CDL is not prohibited. Seven, a prosecutor's decision to reduce a charge or pursue a different charge, likewise, just like a motion to dismiss, prosecutor looks at it, I don't think we're going to make the speeding. I'm going to do the equipment violation. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not prohibited. Number eight, last thing, as we, Judge Garcia and I have said all along on these cases, though, legal and ethical, Two different things. Legally, you can do that. May be unethical if it's a continuing course of conduct to skirt what the federal law is. So the reason for this new course is Missouri in March, I think it was March 20th, 2006, submitted these certified questions. And it was the Missouri Department of Revenue. Interesting, I guess ours would be OCA or somebody, Office of Court Administration, but the Missouri Department of Revenue submitted these questions to the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. So we want to know these different scenarios if this would be a violation of federal law. And let's look at these. Scenario number one, and again, all six are in your materials. Scenario number one, CDL holder is issued a traffic citation for DWI in his private vehicle. Prosecutor reviews the records, determines there's a problem with the evidence, decides not to prosecute the case. No charges are actually filed in court. No conviction. Violation of the federal statute or not? Well, they said no. There's no violation of 49 CFR 383, 384. The federal CDL regulations require conviction, okay? On almost all these, everything in 384, other than the upfront, no driver safety, no deferral, everything's post-conviction, okay? Post-conviction, because that's where the problems were. The persons were already convicted of the offense, and then they were masking it and saying, okay, it was speeding, but I'm going to call it a defective muffler so it won't ruin this guy's driving record, or I'm going to hide it, or I'm going to defer it after the judgment and give him a deferred disposition. So that's what they're concentrating on really here, is it requires a conviction and somebody to be playing with it after it's a conviction. Anything that happens before, prosecutor decides not to file the charge, goes to another charge, reduces it. It could be the same thing where prosecutor says he's charged with 65 miles an hour in a 45. Guy says he was doing 55 in a 45. I'm going to reduce because I can get a plea, and I don't think I'm going to be able to get the evidence to show he's doing 65. I'd rather get a conviction and get that 55 miles per hour. So there are reasons for it, and that is not considered a violation of the federal law. Scenario number two, CDL driver issued a traffic citation for careless and imprudent driving. Our reckless driving, basically, right? Prosecutor files charge for careless and imprudent driving. Case goes to trial. Contrary evidence presented by the CDL driver to show he wasn't driving carelessly or imprudently. Court dismisses the case. Is that a violation? No, it's not a violation because had a trial, the evidence just wasn't there to support a conviction. So that's what the system's for. Innocent to proven guilty. Wasn't enough to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. So driver had his day in court and actually prevailed. So no violation there. Scenario number three, CDL driver issued a traffic citation for improper lane change in a commercial motor vehicle. Prior to the citation being filed, prosecutor looks at it, decides only going to file defective muffler charge. Final conviction, defective muffler. That's the only charge ever signed by the prosecutor. So the only one filed and the only one convicted of was defective muffler. Violation? No. Once again, it's prosecutorial discretion. What's going to be filed? So again, when we look at 384.226, we're looking to determine whether the masking has taken place. So has there been a judgment? Conviction, and then somebody's masking it, hiding it, not reporting it, or deferring it? No. That's what the violations are for. So, I mean, to me, from attending the course at TMCEC for a number of years, hearing Ryan speak on it, it was drilled into my head, you know, can't give them defensive driving, driver safety, can't give them deferrals. And obviously, you're not going to go changing what the charge is or mask it. The only thing to me that's really changed here is getting a glimpse into what the Fed's thinking is it's okay if there's a motion to dismiss and you grant it. It's okay for the prosecutor to decide I'm going to change the charge or go with this charge as opposed to the other charge. That's not a violation of law, and you're not required to delve into what the prosecutor's head is and determine whether or not there's a violation of federal law. We talked about this before. Why is the department strict? Well, they're professional drivers held to a higher standard, and the department is only enforcing state and federal laws. That's basically my presentation. I did have a case, too, that's in your materials, and this one's out of Nashville, Tennessee. It's the Court of Appeals of Tennessee at Nashville. Metropolitan Government of Nashville in Davidson County versus Daryl Stark. This was kind of an interesting case because it's right dead on with what we were just talking about. In this case, it was a UPS driver. Gotta love the UPS driver. I've got a guy that delivers in our neighborhood, and it's always the same ones, right, in the neighborhood. And, man, those guys in FedEx, how they don't get speeding tickets, I don't know, because they're kind of like the pizza delivery drivers, albeit they are better drivers, but they're always hauling, you know, the UPS, because I guess they pay them on how many packages they get delivered, so they are really hauling. But this was a case involving a UPS driver in Tennessee who was charged with 80 miles an hour in a 55 zone. Guess he was going to deliver those packages fast. Went to court. The officer testified, you know, observed the vehicle approaching him, high rate of speed, clicked on the radar gun, clocked at 80. So visually observed, hit the radar, confirmed by radar, 80 and a 55, cited for speeding 80 and a 55. The defendant testified that he thought that the miles before the area, the speed limit was 70. Well, it was 55 where he was clocked. Yeah, it was 70 before. And that he was on a cruise control. He was vacationing with his family. So, again, you have commercial driver operating his own personal vehicle. And the bottom line is he hired an attorney. And then the judge said, look, Judge, this is his own personal vehicle. You know, he's going to probably have some real problems at UPS if he gets a ticket conviction. And it's his own personal vehicle. The prosecutor stood up and said, Judge, you can't give him driver safety course. You know, here's the statute. You know, no driver safety course. Can't do it. And the judge said, well, I'm going to go ahead and allow him to do the driver safety course. So that's what happened in this case. They went ahead and gave him the driver safety course. Went up on appeal to determine whether a trial court may allow a defendant to attend traffic school and have the citation dismissed. And, of course, the Court of Appeals in Tennessee came back specifically talking about 49 CFR 384.226, stating no deferrals. And they actually stated, quote, the federal regulation's clear. The state cannot mask or defer imposition of judgment to prevent a CDL driver's conviction for any type of moving violation besides parking in any type of motor vehicle from appearing on the driver's record, whether the offense was committed in the driver's home state or a different state. Based upon the state and federal laws addressing this issue, the trial court erred in allowing the defendant to attend a traffic safety school, and holding his traffic violation would be dismissed upon completion of the traffic safety school. Defendant holds a commercial driver's license which prevented the trial court from allowing him to benefit from this type of judicial diversion. That's the words they use. Apparently, the trial court was influenced by the fact the defendant was driving a personal vehicle at the time of the violation, but the state and federal law makes clear this is of no consequence. So that was kind of a cool case where you had both scenarios rolled into one on that case. I think it's pretty clear what we know what our mission is and, you know, what's masking. Can't call it something else. Diverting, can't dump it, hide it, divert it, allow DSC or deferred disposition. And, again, you know, if the prosecutor makes a motion to dismiss, changes the charge, that doesn't fly into creating a violation of the federal statute.
So the bright line is to have pre or post judgment sentence. Correct?
What's that again?
So the bright line is that it happened before conviction or after conviction?
The bright line seems to me to be here, they talk about there has to be a judgment. It's playing around with it after judgment, other than, again, up front, no diversion. But everything afterwards, the feds are always talking about the judgment. There wasn't a rendition of judgment, or the charge wasn't filed. That doesn't have anything to do with the statute because the prosecutor didn't file the moving violation. The prosecutor decided to file the defective muffler. So no violation. So it's only doing something to that judgment after it's been rendered, which was, to me, a pretty liberal, I think, for the federal government doing it, it's pretty liberal. It's basically saying, this is real game playing. We're after the judges who are doing things like changing a judgment, tossing it in the trash or in a file cabinet that will never get reported. The pretty outlandish stuff. Yes, sir?
So, as I hear this, the prosecutors and defense lawyers come up, they're always talking about how come they're not changing it in Austin, how come they're not changing it in Austin, so that there's a difference between a personal vehicle and a commercial vehicle when the officer comes curse.
Because the federal law says you can't do it. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Drop it down to what?
Within 10 miles an hour.
Okay. So in other words, they're asking, you still have a conviction, but drop it down to less than 10%. Yeah. Okay.
That doesn't make a difference. It doesn't matter. Pre-judgment.
Well, I think the difference is in the amount of points it racks. I think against their CDL records, my understanding, if it's more than 10%, I think it has that effect, more negative effect on their driving record. But again, you know, that's up to a prosecutor, and that's done on other cases too. I mean, a lot of times a prosecutor will say, I think I may have a problem proving this, that he was doing 20 over, but all right, he's going to plead to 10 over, I'll take that and have a conviction rather than risking going for the 20 and not guilty and getting it blown out of court. So that's, again, prosecutor's deal, you know. So, but again, I think if somebody's doing it as a, if it came up in my court, my prosecutor was just, you know, cranking these out, every single one, I'd be asking questions like, why is it that every CDL holder is getting a motion to dismiss, whereas other cases aren't? And another one I've heard in our area, I've heard this from several different people, that actually some of the highway patrol officers would not check off commercial DL on the ticket. Like, I'll do you a favor and I won't check off commercial DL. Then they go up to the court clerk. I just need to go ahead and take driver safety. Okay, it's not checked as a commercial driver's license holder. So that's something that seems to be happening too. Has anybody else seen that? Well, I've seen and heard about it. Where are you from?
I prosecute Maria Vista. We had that problem.
Okay. So you've heard about some of the officers doing that as kind of help you out here and won't check CDL. And
I may go back and check it now.
So now you're running a 27 and seeing if it what's showing up on the driving record. Is this a commercial or not? Sounds like a good idea.
How are they filed a notice to dismiss? We don't have sand.
Interesting. I haven't heard the notice. Now, I've heard notice of non-suit in civil cases in county court of law, but not in municipal court. Y'all seen a notice to dismiss? I mean, I've always seen motion to dismiss. Notice of non-suit for a civil case, but
if they're not, they just call it
yeah. Well, you know, the bottom line is, to me, if you have a prosecutor, and there are some out there, just like there's some judges playing hanky-panky, and they're basically running a mill to make some money and saying, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll just I'm not going to file this ticket. You know, ours are automatically filed like most cities. You know, once the officer's filed, the prosecutor doesn't walk them in and say, I've reviewed this ticket and I want to file. I mean, you know, right? I mean, most of them are just, they're filed. If they're really not good, the prosecutor can make a motion to dismiss like, this isn't going to fly, you know, or this is another jurisdiction. But you do have the ones where the prosecutor's saying, I'll tell you what we're going to do. I'm going to just pull this off the docket, dismiss it. Your guy keeps his record clean for 6 months. I'm not going to refile it. Well, if you're doing that as a prosecutor, I think, you know, here you've got a federal law. When you're an attorney, when you raise your hand, took that oath, same as a judge, you know, support, defend, protect, you know, follow the laws of this state and the United States, are you violating that? I think that prosecutor's got an ethical dilemma, and I think could be subject to a grievance committee with the State Bar of Texas if they found out, same as a judge being in front of the commission. That case in Austin is going to be interesting on the donations to the city. But I think that's kind of crazy. Any other comments or questions? Yes, sir.
I've always had a question, so I understand this only applies to moving violations. But
right.
For example, seatbelt tickets, insurance tickets, are those considered moving violations?
Well, this actually says to everything but parking. So I would say based on that language, yes.
It says local traffic control law.
Yeah.
Well,
it's. That's a good question. I don't know. Yeah. But, you know, city things, I mean, seatbelts are state law. So maybe they're talking about things like, you know, the city ordinances, tractor trailers can't use this boulevard, you know, because we don't want to see big, ugly trucks driving in or something. Or, you know, they're too noisy. So maybe that's what they're talking about. I don't know. That's a good question. Yeah. But it may not, you know, hit him with any points, seatbelt. I don't know. Yeah. Yes, sir.
What happens when you have a show cause hearing? You get taken to course, and you're a show cause, or you has taken to course?
That's a good question. I mean, it's the same thing that comes up, too, which I just had one in my court, where a guy comes in with his driving record. And it's like, you just had driver safety course 8 months ago. You're not eligible. But I've taken the course. I just went and took it again. I'm like, sorry. You know, I accepted the plea and just ran it through and found him guilty. Yeah. I mean, any other ideas on that? I mean, he's entered a plea of no contest. He's sworn under oath he's eligible to take it. Find out he's not, I render judgment. He can appeal it if he wants, but I render judgment on him and accepted the plea of no contest. And he understood. I said, you know you weren't eligible, so... I think that'd be judicial discretion. I mean, you could say, well, we can let you withdraw, vacate, start over from square one if you want to have a trial.
We may have not known by putting him on probation.
It's an interesting... That's a real... Yeah.
As a prosecutor.
Right, and question the person. I think that's an interesting point about whether, you know, the prosecutor should be required to plead that. I saw an interesting thing when I was representing people on traffic tickets. There was a... prosecutor who was a contracted attorney. It was up in Pflugerville, and he would always plead them on anybody, not just CDL drivers, but he'd say speeding more than 1 mile an hour over the speed limit. He wouldn't specify it. It was a real interesting way to do it. So he wouldn't get tied to, you know, 10 miles an hour over, and the officer testifies, well, it was 9, and then and not guilty. So he would just plead speeding greater than 1 mile an hour over the speed limit. It was a real interesting way of doing it. But it's kind of what you were talking about, what's required to be pled. Because I don't think it matters on the as far as the proof for the actual offense, but certainly it does matter on sentencing, what sentencing options are open. Interesting, though. Yeah, that's interesting. That would be a real neat one to go up on appeal. So you need to get that one on appeal. Unless you don't put him on there and then defendant appeals saying, well, but then he can't. And then that's a catch 22 because he knows he's a CDL driver, so he's not. Yeah, so that's an interesting situation. But the attorneys are arguing that in Dallas, at least the ones doing CDLs.
Daily.
Interesting. Okay. Any other comments? Or? All right. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate your attention and hope you have a great day today. All right. Thank you.